It's Wednesday, March 9th, 2011, and you're listening to episode 224 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 12 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is Chad.
My name is John.
My name is Pat.
And I'm Chris.
Damn it, that's right, we got Chris with us tonight.
Oh, sorry.
I thought it was going to be a good episode because John was back and then Chris showed up. Yeah.
I know, I know. See, now you guys can rip on me like you have the last couple episodes, but have me actually here to enjoy it as it happens.
Guess who was on Kicked in the Dice Bags again?
You? A third time?
Yes, I was.
Dude, you're really pouring out to that place, man.
I like those guys a lot.
I actually was on that as well because you announced it the last couple episodes ago.
Yeah.
And I didn't say anything, but I'd already recorded my episode, so I've been on there as well. But you might not know it because I was on it with Chad.
The past story.
Pat, you've put it very well. You have not talked on more podcasts than the rest of us combined.
That's true. I have.
So, tequila. Oh, yeah. So
we have bottoms up.
We have shots of teal in front of us, and this time we're not commemorating anything except brain cells. So,
woo! All right, I got coffee.
I'm playing on Facebook. I'm waiting until we're
rolling. Well, it was a little more in a shot. Okay. First off, Fear the Con 4 shirts are now available. We got a great design from Ruben, who on our forums is Save versus DM. And I want to thank Stacy for getting that taken care of, for actually getting the shop.
He's going to get to come, isn't he?
I believe so, yes.
Okay, good.
I want to thank Chad for making the executive decision to get that done when I was overwhelmed by work. I want to thank Chris for a predictably innuendo-laden slogan. Yeah. The slogan for this con is simply play, but Chris has cleverly made it Fear the Con, new line, for play. It's brilliant, I guess.
Yes.
But nonetheless, I will put a link to that in the show notes. If you order this stuff soon, you should get it in time for the con. And even if you can't make it to the con, this is a great way to show the public that you are a sad person who wishes that you were out there
for such an awesome event. I gotta put my order in. Although I have to say, I looked on the site today and I saw some of the colors that have been put on the
Pat,
for the shirt.
Shut up.
And
I do
wonder about some of those colors. I think they're pretty bold.
Stacy, and rightly so, took the shotgun approach. There's like, I would say 50 to 60 items that you can put your logos on in Cafe Press, and she put them on all of them.
Including, Pat, are you ready for this? There's a Fear the Con 4 thong.
Nice.
Dude, I have at least two Dragon Realms thongs.
All right, so I got to ask a question real quick. Who is it that started the secondary store that's not publicly listed for the Baron Von Badass and Fear the Boot food containers?
What?
You think I'm joking? I will show this to you later.
I saw the admin listing in the store. No, I didn't.
It is weird. It is genuinely weird. And I'm trying to figure out who to blame for this.
Do we have a trademark violation?
No.
I have work.
Wayne. This has got to be a Wayne thing.
Yeah.
He's the only guy here messed up enough for this. There has got to be some explanation for this. I just want to know why. Because there's like these food containers, like kind of like thermoses.
Right.
But shorter and broader.
They have ones for cans. And then they have
that's definitely Wayne then.
They're thermos food jars.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like stuff. And lunch kits for adults.
And someone created an alternate store off of our account that uses our branding. This is a hidden store. For those items. And I'm trying to figure out who to blame for this.
If it's hidden, how do you get to it?
Because we have
I log in through the admin account.
Oh, I see.
I can see the things that aren't publicly
available. They did it so they could buy it for themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Gotcha. Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out what the hell's wrong with who.
Wayne!
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Wayne.
So Wayne's just not here to fess up to what he's
done. I should have fallen on that grenade. Wayne's really sick right now, actually.
I hope he gets better. Does he have what you had?
I'm sorry. I have to tell you guys this. I have been telling that son of a bitch for a fucking month
to wash his hands,
see a doctor about his damn cough, and he's like, "Oh no, I don't need to see a doctor. I don't need to see a doctor. Well, I'll get to one eventually. I'll get to one." So, like Tuesday this week, he's going, he's coughing like 3 times a minute, and I finally yell over the cube because I sit right next to him. I'm like, "Wayne, when are you going to go see a doctor? Seriously?" And he's like, "Huh, well, sir, I'm not going to go see a doctor. I don't need to." And I'm like, "You've been coughing for a goddamn
famous
month."
Last words.
And he says, "Oh, no.
Is he quoting Jim Henson?
"I'm over that cough. This is something new. I think this is the cold you gave me."
Oh, it's your
fault. Yeah, it's my fault. And this is something. And this is something new. The next day, he can barely walk, and he has to go to the doctor. They got him on 5 different kind of medications and some breathing thing.
Jesus Christ, dude.
I know.
That's
horrible.
You know what? One of these days, son of a bitch, when we do our next Fear the Boot Bedtime Stories bonus episode,
we're going to do Beat a Ginger.
No. We ought to do.
And if not, we need to start that before. Right now.
She enjoyed it.
Once
it was great.
We take care of Raina's wings, we will move on to a cure gingivitis.
You banged a ginger pet?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, I haven't.
I didn't need to know that.
So there's not many of them.
Yeah, you know, actually, genetically speaking, gingers are going away.
Yeah.
And that's a damn shame.
So we are going to have a bonus episode about medical malpractice, and I'm going to tell you about my run-in with pneumonia and a doctor whom I call to this day the amazing cocaine warrior. Mm-hmm. It is a great story.
Was this the guy who was going to kill you?
No,
you
did sign language to your mom? Wait a minute. He's saving this gym up.
I'm just asking.
No,
no, this is a different story.
That was a different guy. That was an ICU doctor.
Okay.
The guy that nearly killed me until I signed language to my mom was an ICU doctor. I've got a lot of stories about medical malpractice, but we'll save those for Fear the Boot Bedtime Stories.
Let me just say that I respect the medical profession, and I've never had a bad run-in with a doctor.
You know what?
Yet. You have. You have.
I have.
You're outrageous.
I have an enormous amount of respect.
He's truly outrageous.
He's truly outrageous.
I have an enormous amount of respect for the medical profession. My mom has been a surgical nurse at St. John's for 40-some-odd years. I know a lot of doctors over there. I have a huge amount of respect.
I have a lot of doctor friends.
But I have been to see so many idiots over the year that pretty much I go see a moron. And then I call my mom
and
say,
some doctors who live in my neighborhood.
Yeah, I didn't move away. Their kids are in my kids' school. But they never spend the night.
And then I call
are doctors.
And then I call my mom and say, Mom, I just saw some malpractice jackass. She calls a friend of hers and gets me in to see a real doctor, and they straighten it out. But I have seen so many idiots on the way to seeing real doctors. Holy crap, could I fill an episode by myself with that. But that's for a different episode. For this episode, I have an email.
Holy crap, he's taking the mic out of the mic stand. This is serious, people.
Does this ever happen?
This is getting real right now.
Is he going lounge thing around you guys?
This only happens when he's at, like, two margaritas and a shot.
This happens every episode. When I record the show intro,
and you do your beatboxing podcast that you're too ashamed to talk about on the air.
When I do the intro of every single episode.
Like the store.
Yeah, yeah. He has like 500 episodes of danbeatbox.com that he refuses to release to the public until it's, quote, ready.
I was on his computer looking for porn, and all I could find is this beatbox.
Yeah, I thought beatbox was his folder.
Yeah, I thought beatbox. I'm like,
okay,
this is promising. Yeah. I'm like, what is this?
You
it's
know
nothing
what?
But wave
where's,
after wave.
Where's the naked chicks?
Hold up. I'm going to throw you guys a bone here. I'm going to throw you guys a bone here.
I don't want your bone.
Whoa.
My first two initials, if you put up my last name, is DJ Repperger.
That's stupid.
Carry on, Dan.
I like it.
Carry on, Christian Soldier.
Now that I've shut you up. All right, so every single episode, I'll have you know I do the intro with the mic off the stand. Oh, yeah. All right, but I'm doing this because there's an
email. You peed twice already. How do you have to pee again?
I don't know.
God damn it, Pat.
Pat, get your prostate checked. Holy crap.
Man, I don't even have that much problem.
Well, Wayne's not here tonight, so somebody's got to do it.
Chad got an email, which he has forwarded to me, which I want to read, because there's something about this I don't understand. Now, this email overall is brilliant. But there's one part of it I don't understand. I'll explain that when I get to the end of the email. So this email is entitled Baby Born to Fear the Boot. You can tell this is already an outstanding mail headed in great directions. And this email says, on January 14th at about 1 a.m. local time, I awoke to someone on your podcast saying, nice muscle. Great moment.
Yes.
And Karen, my wife, telling me to call her mother because she was in actual labor. And this is in quotes, like there's some theoretical form of actual labor. Yeah.
No, there's like false labor.
Yes, there is.
Okay, fair enough. And an hour later, Kara Auburn Kentz, after Kara Zor-El, came into the
Superman
world.
Sister.
Yes, at 8 pounds, exactly.
Whoa, did you say an hour later?
Pat, shut up.
No, seriously,
that woman's a machine if she is an hour later.
Man's kid just freaking
falls out.
She woke up
in labor, and then 1 hour later, the kid's born.
Guys, who does this surprise? She struck the right pose to break through the placental wall. That's what the game Muscle March is about. This girl flexed in the right pose.
I'm amazed she made it to a hospital.
Return placenta. All right.
Address unknown.
No such fetus.
And nowhere to go.
And scored 9 out of 10 on the APTGR.
Are they testing our children?
APGAR.
As soon as they come out of the womb?
Yes.
Oh, this one will get a 30 on her ACT.
Yes, they are.
I don't understand.
Oh, this culture is out of control.
How yellow is this baby?
How healthy is the baby?
Holy shit. Pat?
No, that's no, what it is.
It's how yellow the baby is. Because
it's to see if they're jaundiced.
Oh,
if the liver isn't functioning,
I'm not being racist.
Oh, it's a mongoloid. I knew we shouldn't have gone to Hoo-Hot twice a week. Oh, my God. I saw you looking, Mr. Kim.
How do we have an Asian baby?
It's gone down in flames.
So, no, this is a great episode. Keep going.
Because John says, I'm sorry, John says,
people are going to love this episode.
All right. So,
I don't think so. All right,
so how does it... So how does it feel to have your first birth during your podcast? P.S. I often put your show on loop when I go to sleep, so there's a good chance she was conceived with visions of Venn diagrams and rubber meeting the road still ringing in my ears.
Oh, I don't think rubber was meeting much if she was conceived.
It was impossible to be conceived when the rubber meets the road. So it's when the rubber flies off the road.
So here's when you crinkle around a candy bar and you're like, yep, I unwrapped it.
Pat, all I have to say is that our work is now complete.
So here's what I don't get. I can understand people getting it onto my dulcet tones, but you assholes, my gosh,
please.
That would be like the biggest cold shower
you
in the world.
You can seriously imagine listening to you talk about riffs.
Yes, yes, I can.
God, I can't.
Yes, I can. But the minute Chad opens his mouth or... Well, Pat never talks, and John, you haven't been around, or Chris talks about his medications. I mean, it'd just be like, end of the road. I'd be done. And I don't mean done like how Pat's usually done. I mean, like,
I'm pitching a tent right now.
Good Lord, is this podcast about anything?
Yeah, let's talk about RPGs.
And by the way, congratulations on the birth. I mean, we make comments about it. That's a wonderful, wonderful thing. So good for you guys.
Yes, absolutely. I got to say... Definitely this guy, as much as we're being a bunch of, you know, jackals
degenerates.
Here. Yeah, degenerates here.
Yes, congratulations.
I really have to do have to say, first of all, congratulations.
Pat's sitting here like, I've had two. I don't see what's so special about having one.
May your 8 weeks pass quickly.
Yeah, I got to say, you know, first of all, God bless you and your kid. Congratulations. I hope she grows up to be just a wonderful and successful woman. So all of our...
I hope she turns out to be Supergirl.
Yeah.
Yeah. go January babies. Woohoo.
So I've got to say, seriously, dude, all jokes aside, congrats, well done, and thank you for tuning in. Even though it's a little strange, you were conceived in my voice. You know, if Carl ever has a kid, that will also be conceived in my voice. We nonetheless...
Yeah, let's not go any farther than that. You don't want to get me rolling.
Yeah, what the hell do you guys talk about?
Really nothing. So actually, I guess that would be unique.
Yeah,
so.
I hope.
All right. So anywho... the real topic we were supposed to talk about.
God,
this
my
episode.
Taxes are due. I know. Deal with it on Thursday. Damn it, Dan. I don't want to go back to Burger King tomorrow. I want you to cook. Damn it, Carla.
See, people make fun of that, but that's when you know that you are absolutely 100% comfortable with this person.
That's too comfortable.
It is.
I would rather have an element of...
No. Too comfortable is when you have conversations while the other person is in the bathroom. That is too comfortable.
I'm okay with that.
What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
I have a conversation while we're both in the bathroom.
Uh-huh.
There's no way I want
Julie there while I'm dropping a deuce. You know, exactly. Go get people a little bit of
Thank
mystery
you, Chris. Thank you. Thank you. So the role-playing topic for this week we're going to talk about is the one we've been setting up now for a couple weeks, which is player character death. And this got really brought home recently by the fact that for those of you who follow our forums already know this. For those of you who don't, I'll go ahead and catch you up. In our Sunday game, my character got killed very unexpectedly.
At last!
Very unexpectedly, the rest of us. But prior to this... There was a forum conversation about one of our other episodes where we briefly mentioned player character death, and a whole lot of people latched on to that subject. And internally discussing it, we kind of realized that it has been a very long time. I mean, this is episode 224. It has been a really long time since we talked about PC Death. And in those years, I mean, Fear the Boot's now approaching its 5-year anniversary. And in those years, oh, yeah.
Good Lord.
Our views have evolved. And on top of that, also the podcast staffing has changed. Though it's ironic that actually three of the, I suppose, what most people think was the original four hosts are on the air. Though actually the original hosts were me, Chad, Kevin, and Tim. But anyways, side story for another time.
Kevin didn't say anything either.
Yeah, I know. He's like, he was like the ancient Pat. And Chris is like the ancient. We want to revisit that subject because of the fact that just got brought home for us. And I think our views have evolved.
My views haven't evolved. Kill. So,
this is the beauty of the fact that John is present, and I believe Chris as well, because of the fact that you guys are a whole lot more bloodthirsty than I think me, Pat, Chad, or Wayne
would I'm not
be.
Bloodthirsty. I'm not out to kill you. I just kill you when you die. I've killed you.
I'm pro-character death, but I'm also pro...
But you put boundaries on it.
Character, yeah. To me,
here's the thing.
The whole character death topic is very multi-layered and nuanced. I think when people say, kill all characters, kill all the time, just kill them, kill them, kill them. It's like, no. We need to pull back from that and talk about it. But people who say no character death at all under any circumstances, I think they're missing out on a good chunk of
what do you mean pull back from that? Well, I mean, what do you do when someone hits negative 10 hit points?
Negative 10 plus constitution bonus.
What the hell ever? What do you do when they die?
Let me set this topic up in the following way. The last time I played in a John game where a character died, because in the second John game I played, I just rolled outstandingly well, and my character not only survived, but actually thrived. And John, I have credited you on previous episodes. I don't know if you actually listened to the show or not, but I've credited with you on previous episodes with being very fair. You will not only kill me when I get it, but you will give me the bonus when I get it.
Sure, yeah.
You're not out to screw me.
No, I roll above the table.
Yeah, you're straight fair. But Chad, when I died in John's game, what I died to was a trap on a random, inconsequential, non-plot-oriented treasure chest.
Lame.
You would never kill me on that.
That wouldn't even be in my game in the first place.
So that's the dichotomy.
It wasn't non-consequential and non-plot.
Well, nonetheless, that's the dichotomy I'm setting up here, is you would never kill me to a dart trap. John did. John,
it was a needle trap. And it had a note in it that led you to the next part of the plot.
Yeah, the note ended up in my hand and on my corpse.
Oh, I got the note.
But, and this is the first point I'm going to make on this subject, is whatever a game master's view is on character death, that view ought to be made explicitly clear to the group going into a game. In fact, in our most recent game, the one we're still playing on Sundays, Chad specifically asked us, do you guys want character death? And if so, at what threshold?
Because I'm in favor of character death, and I also see the reasoning behind not having it.
Provided the players agreeable to it.
Provided the players agree to it.
With John's game, I knew going into it that if I rolled crappy, or an enemy rolled really well,
John game.
Or a treasure chest rolled really well, it was going to be the end of my character.
Well, here's the thing. Why put the damn chest in the game if no one can get hurt by it? Chest trap was dangerous. You obviously found that out the hard way, but it lends currency to the tension in my game
world.
Well,
I absolutely 100% agree with
you. Let's start with that. In the discussion...
And I also see why you wouldn't have character death in a game.
In the discussion that popped up on our forums, and one of the guys who is most pro-player character death is ironically named Trigger Happy, and Trigger Happy's points, and I'm trying to paraphrase him here, so if you want to read his points, check the forums. Don't take my word
for
it.
His points are there in ad nauseum.
Just like everyone else on our forum. Look, RPG forums are about wankery. If you haven't caught that already, check RPGNet, then visit our forums. The point that he made was that, look, when guns or swords come out, a real possibility is someone is going to die. And if the threat of death is not there, then it does, in some level, erode the realism or the emotional investment
that exists in the game. I don't give two shakes of a dead dog's about realism, but I want dramatic tension. And That's see, why it's there.
I agree with the dramatic tension part. I disagree with the realism part because I have yet to see a role-playing game with realistic combat rules.
He and I went back and forth, and he raised...
And I don't want to play a game with realistic combat rules either. You know how big those would be?
He raised some very good points I can't entirely argue with. But my counterpoint was there are other ways to penalize a character, even for combat, that don't involve death.
Sure.
Now, for example, in a game like Skies of Glass or Spirit of the Century, you have a built-in mechanic for penalizing a character for going into combat. In Skies of Glass, you could get shot and get a crippled limb for the rest of your life. In Spirit of the Century, you can take on negative characteristics that will dog you for the rest of the game. That's obviously harder in D&D, where a quick heal spell and amend makes it like it never happened.
Damage is meaningless in D&D. I mean, if you're talking about realistic character death in D&D, if you have 110 hit points and I shoot you with 100 one-point arrows, you don't care. Mechanically speaking, nothing stops you.
Yeah.
And I shoot you with 9 more points of arrows, you still don't care and are not slowed down. You have arrows sticking. You're like a friggin' pincushion, and it does not matter to you. But that one arrow, that one last arrow, thwink, dung.
Takes you from perfectly functional to dead.
I get the dramatic tension. I totally agree with you on the dramatic tension. I totally disagree on the mechanical realism because I've yet to see a game with mechanical realism.
To finish that point, let me also throw out that one of the counterpoints that was raised, I don't think this was raised by me, it was raised by somebody else, was that there are other forms of punishment that don't involve injury or death. The party can get captured, gear can get broken. Things can happen shy of death that affect the characters or the party in a meaningful way. Now, I am not using this to dismiss his point, because I think he still has a valid point that if you are going to engage in a fatal situation where two people are out to kill each other, the fact that death is implicitly understood as not being possible for some people in the kind of game they want, that erodes a level of enjoyment.
What?
Because look, there are people out there who want that challenge, who want that thrill, who want that threat, and taking death off the table eliminates that.
What is the?
Who gives a crap about playing dice if you shoot 7 every time? What you've all seen the Twilight Zone episode where the gambler wins every time.
What
and
is
it sucks.
The point of combat? Is the point of combat in a role playing game to have this dramatic back and forth, and you don't know who's going to win, and then people might die? Very valid.
Yes.
Or is it something that there's an action scene in a story, and it moves the story along, and then it's done, the story keeps going, and that's valid as well. And if people die, if the whole party dies, the story stops.
All right, and there was a point that was raised, and I'm going to give my views here in a minute. I'm trying to fairly represent a variety of views here. But a counterpoint that was raised...
Chad and I are trying to stop you.
I know. I mean, come on. At this table, raise your hand if you're in favor of pointless random encounters. Is anyone here? Yeah.
No one's hand went up. This
exactly.
This is a radio
show. I think Chris Hussey's just
Chris's went up, but...
My hand did not go up.
Good.
Okay.
But his...
All right. So...
Because I think that random counters can have a point.
God damn it, Chris. So here was the point that was raised, though. If there is an encounter, or specifically a combat encounter that occurs in a game that is so insignificant that character death, a dramatic character death, is not on the table, as people who believe, speaking about the Fear of the Boot hosts here, that every portion of a game ought to be meaningful to the game, why the hell did we put it in there in the first place?
I didn't.
Well,
I don't think Chad did either.
My point. Their point. Okay, let me rephrase that. But if character death is not sufficient for this situation, it's so insignificant, real consequence in the form of death is not on the table, would it not be arguable that combat never should have been in there in the first place? It was just filler.
Yeah, it could have been two minutes of narration.
I don't think the combat should be in there because it's f***ing boring. Let's roll dice because that represents hitting people with a sword.
Chad's second point that he made earlier, I think that it can be worthwhile if it's a plot device to move things forward. You know, if you're using that as some sort of story element to move things forward, then it is worthwhile to have that in there.
Do you have to have mechanical combats? Like, I'm reading what you're picking up, Chris. The fight against the boss on game 2. everyone knows no one's going to die, but it moves the plot forward in whatever way. Why does that have to be a fight? I mean, why do we have to all kid ourselves by throwing these dice?
Why do we have to practice the algebra? Why do we have to get out the dice?
Can I back this up? Because not everyone may know Chris as well as we do. Chris, can you give me an example of a combat that would move the game forward but is not worth any character dying over? Can you give me an example?
John kind of alluded to it right there. If it's a sub-boss, if it's a semi-major NPC, you know, someone who works for the big bad who you need to get past to get there. Now, I'm not saying that you even necessarily have to kill that guy, but maybe you do indeed have to engage in combat to subdue that guy so that you can plot-wise move forward. He's just not going to see you show up and turn over and say, oh, there's six of you and only one of me. I guess I'll just give up. No, there's probably going to be some sort of confrontation there. And it doesn't always have to end in death, but you may still need to engage in combat to add some tension to that thing. And yeah, you know what? A character can die during that situation. And maybe that, you know, and if it happens, well, then it happens. And then the story takes that turn just as if it was to take that turn if the players engineered it and went left when you wanted them to go right.
What if a player comes to you as a GM and says, I want my character to die. I want to write it into the story. I want it to be really cool. I want it to be this setup. If that's acceptable to everyone, if that's a good thing to do, there's two things about it. One, that's fudging the mechanics. That is
doesn't have
mechanics,
to be.
But that's a lie.
Doesn't and have I, to be. And, I and go I down agree. To the reactor chamber with the thermal detonator and I flip it. You don't have to roll dice for that. You die.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree with you. And I think people make that point, and I think it's a weak point that I don't agree with. But on the other hand,
why the hell did you bring it? Because people make it? Okay.
Yeah, because he's Dan's been making points that he doesn't necessarily agree with all night. All right.
Okay, fair enough.
So, on the other hand of that, though, what if there's a combat and somebody dies, and a player comes to you and says, you know what? I don't want my character to have died. Yeah, it was 100% legit, and we agreed to it, and we agreed that there was going to be death in this campaign, and the character died, but you know what? I like my character. I've made other characters. I'm not feeling them. This character was really lodged into the plot. It was tied in with all these other characters. It was a stupid death, but it was legit and fair. I don't want the character to have died. And what do you do? Is one legitimate and the other not? I mean, it's two sides of the same coin.
Let me repeat, I think, something I said a little bit earlier, because I think this cannot get enough emphasis, which is this is something the GMs and the players have to agree upon at the start of a campaign. We have said repeatedly, the only way you win at a role-playing game is for everyone to have fun. The only way you lose at a role-playing game is for people to not have fun. As long as you agree upon at the start of a campaign, or at least understand going into it, these are the parameters of the campaign. This is the setting. This is the system. This is the likelihood of character death.
Dan, I don't think you can get out of it that way, because Chad has acknowledged you said all that and everyone agreed.
Yeah.
But now on game 7, Fred got his hobbit killed and he wants it back.
Well, hold on though.
Am I correct there, Chad?
No. Yeah. I'll get to that. This ties into something we've started facetiously calling Gnarlgate surrounding the death of my character, which I'll get into in a second. And I'm going to try to do very carefully because I don't want to drag this down with a gaming story or finger pointing, but I'll try to get into it very carefully
here
in a moment.
Chad.
It is.
But
many people told me.
But it came up in our game, and I would say that agreement at the start is important. John, in my game, when my character died, I don't remember his name, but my first goblin died.
Brot,
that's right. The Doom Whaler.
Yes.
When you said he was dead, I accepted it. I think if memory serves, it's been a while, you even sent me a private message over Map Tools, because this was an online game, saying, are you okay with him dying? And I said, dude, this is just the way you run a campaign. I'm not going to walk out of here with my panties all in a knot because of the fact that you GM the way you GM. I knew this coming into a John game that I could die on really what to me seemed like random and pointless things. And I made a new character who I enjoyed. And unfortunately, the campaign fizzled out shortly thereafter. But I did make another character and the game went on. In Chad's game,
my only defense is that it wasn't random and it wasn't pointless. But well, we would have to get into gaming stories to hack that.
Fair enough,
Dan. You gotta clarify something for me though, and maybe I may take this statement back that I think that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. But you gotta clarify when you're talking about the parameters of the campaign. I'm with you up until the point where you're talking about the chance for character death. Are you honestly saying that when you sit down before you start a campaign that the GM should lay out, here are the circumstances when with which your character will likely die?
Sort of. Yes. Almost. In but I
broad phrase... stroke. As an example, we did a campaign years ago where I think Dan was running it. And Dan says, how do you guys feel about character death? And you didn't even say that because you knew nobody wanted it. You said, okay, no character death and no sudden death. We call it sudden death. No sudden death in this. But if you're going down a hallway and there's all kind of signs pointing down the hallway, it says there's a spike pit trap here. And the guy at the head of the hallway says, if you go down this hallway, you're going to fall in the spike pit trap and die. And you see dead bodies there and they fall in the pit trap and you've died. And I, meta, as a game master, look at you and say, if you go down this hallway, you're going to die. There's no way around it. Walk down that hall. You say, I'm walking down that hallway. You're going to die.
Well, that was our rule in the games that we played back in the Deerbergs days.
That's where I got
it. It was you're never going to just get gibbed in a fight, but if you make a dumb decision, the dice don't go your way, your ass is dead, and there's no appeals. You roll another.
Yeah, I said, Chris, I would basically agree with what you're saying, but I would nuance it a little bit differently. And Chad's basically right on what he's saying. That what I would do at the start of campaigns, I would sit down and basically ask the players, prior to rolling up a single character, how lethal do you want this game to be? Do you want this to be the kind of game where you can only die at major plot points? Or do you want this to be the kind of game where the random encounter with a wyvern could axe your character? And if the party said to me, no, we really need a game where death is a meaningful part of the challenge, I would roll with that. Mm-hmm. But if the players say to me, which within my groups, and let me stress my groups, historically have, that no, I'm really invested in my character. I don't want him to die on these meaningless encounters. That I am perfectly happy having the bad guys hack them down to unconsciousness.
See, I just don't have meaningless encounters.
Well, I don't
bingo.
Like,
fair point.
I disagree with how you're couching the terms too. I agree with your overall.
Yeah, I'm having
point,
a hard time wrapping my head around this because all I can think of it is in gameplay examples. Because suddenly I'm going to be in an encounter that I may indeed judge as meaningless, and then I'm going to lose my investment in this encounter. And so I'm trying to understand.
I made a poor word choice with meaningless. Let me rephrase that and recouch that.
Well, and I also disagree with how you couched it in saying that we are doing a no-death campaign because I am more invested in my character. I think you can have a high-death, high-lethality campaign with people very heavily invested in
their
character.
Not saying you
characters.
Can't. I'll get to that point in a minute.
But there's a problem with
not
that
saying
too.
You can't. Yeah. I'll get to that in a minute. But Chris, let me rephrase my point because you guys are right. My choice of meaningless was a poor word choice. So let me retract that. Let me phrase this instead.
All the retractions are back.
Is it may be meaningful, but it is not of plot turning character death significance. Let me give you an example. Imagine if Luke and Ben had died in the brief altercation with nameless alien number 5 in the cantina. On
Dr. Evasion and Ponda Baba, they have names.
John,
they all have names.
John, what did I tell you at dinner?
I don't know. You have the death sentence in over 12 systems. I'm in the same classification as Pearl, Valium, and your AK-47.
That is exactly right.
Okay, that's very good.
And I just want you to know that that is still true. The point being, to the typical audience member, this is just some random alien. The point of the encounter was to show the dangerousness of Mos Eisley and the power of Ben Kenobi. It was not meant to kill Luke and Ben. Ben does die. That's a later plot point at a different point in the story. And that's what I mean by a meaningless combat. I don't mean it's literally meaningless, because I am absolutely in agreement. If it's utterly meaningless, ditch it from the game and replace it with something meaningful. But what I mean is this.
But I think all combats are meaningless, because I believe
I don't know that I agree with that.
Because I believe ultimately, whether you're doing high death or no death, the players are playing the quote-unquote good guys, and the good guys are supposed to win. If they don't win, then sure, they don't succeed at this short-term goal, or they get captured or whatever, but if they lose,
but I mean,
are people having fun?
But isn't that, though, the point?
Unless you're playing Mystery Men, the comic book.
Of many character stories. I mean, one of the greatest campaigns I ever played in, and I don't say this for the reason I'm about to give, there were 4 characters in the game. Mine was the only one that survived. All 3 other quote-unquote good guys, the protagonists at any rate, died. But nonetheless, that was one of the most dramatically powerful games I have ever been in.
But I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm not on this side that says there should be no player death in campaign, or no character death.
Not at my table.
There should be no character death in campaigns. I don't agree with that at all. I think it depends on the flavor of the campaign you want.
So let's give our real views here. We've entertained enough, I think, the views we don't necessarily agree with. Mm. We've tried to kind of play the devil's advocate. So let me now actually Well, fair enough. But let me give...
Pat over here is nothing but self-serving rambling. You were yelling at us the entire dinner.
As soon as
the microphone's coming in front of you.
I know.
I'm telling you, you want to shut this man's whore hole, all you have to do is put a microphone in front of it. Will not shut up until you put a mic in front of him, and he has nothing to say. I don't know how many people have come to Fear the Con or Gen Con and be like, I can't believe it. I met Pat, and he's nothing like he is on the mics because you can't shut him up. You put a mic in front of his face, it might as well be a cork in his mouth. That's why I asked Pat to be on the show, because I'm like, this is a guy who has funny opinions that he states unabashedly.
I asked him to be on the show. That's why I asked him to be on the show, because he's funny and opinionated.
I defer to your goatee.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Just stroke it.
Okay, colors.
I'll stroke it.
Colors. All right.
Okay, so now we actually tell our positions.
All right, so here's my position. When we did the original show, I said, as best as I recall, that I was only in favor of player character death in three situations. One, the player requests it.
That's something that everybody can agree on.
Yeah, I think we'd all agree upon that. Someone says, I'm tired of my character. It makes sense for my character to die, whatever the reason is.
It would be really awesome.
It'd be really cool.
Yeah.
Maybe even in some cases, they start the campaign saying, I don't know when, I don't know how, but this is the concept within which I want my character to die.
Every single game I've ever run for John. Yep. Every single
we'll get to
one.
John
I haven't actually died in all of them, but I've had a
we'll
plan.
Get to we'll get to John's thing in a minute.
Actually, I think it's been more surprising when you haven't died.
Well, yeah, pretty much.
And John's going to be a great case study in an email we got from a guy named Ian about masochistic players.
I'm not a masochist, I'm a dramatist.
Sure. However you like to couch it. So the second thing is
maybe a dancing queen.
Number two, when the player
I'm Fernando.
When the player is flaunting the lethality of the game, they say to me, I know as a game master you're not gonna kill me. So as Chad put it, Tiananmen Square style, I'm gonna throw myself in front of the tank because you ain't gonna do anything about it.
I also have to say that Tiananmen Square guy, that guy has some balls, man.
Pat's Mamma Mia.
Well, and he rolled some critical successes on Intimidate Tank.
Yes.
Because he survived it. But I had a game, Battletech game, where Tex said, I'm ejected. He was ejected from his mech. I'm going to stare down an enemy mech with my pistol. Now, mind you, fair and square, according to Battletech rules, he had actually destroyed one mech previously with a personal weapon just because he's the most obscene roller I've ever met in my entire life that didn't have loaded dice. But he did it. I said, Tex, you're going to die. He said, I don't care. We went back and forth like that for 10 minutes, and I finally said, okay, here's the dice. You're dead. So the second situation would be flaunting the death. The third, and this is because of one of my personal bones, is PC infighting. If one player character...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think if it's player versus player, the gloves are off.
If one player character attacks another, gloves are off. And
that's how games end.
At that, oh yeah,
gloriously.
Well, up to gloriously.
Oh my god, our cyberpunk game was
and
awesome.
The castle game
and the castle game, awesome.
Why was it always me and a certain other player?
Continued
because someone else is more of a drama queen than you are,
I suppose.
Yeah, but the point being, in the previous episode, I said those were my three situations. I believe that since then, my views have backed off a little bit. They have crept ever so slightly in John's direction that if there is a situation where a player appears to be sensibly, realistically, even I as the game master can't come up with excuses for you anymore, you're going to die, I would allow the death to occur.
There's always excuses.
Well,
there's always
maybe,
way.
But
you
I'm talking about
the universe.
Plausible excuses.
I think there's always a plausible universe. It's just a universe. There's always a plausible reason.
I don't know about that.
I think there is.
I think there's always a passable reason. I don't know about plausible.
I think that I have seen enough serial pulp cliffhangers to know there's always a way out.
You can torture the text as much as you want, but when you roll above the table and dies...
Well, actually, hold on. Dan's talking about before the rolling.
I'm saying the wizard went to zero hit points, but isn't at negative 10. Will the guy switch targets or keep stabbing the wizard? That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay.
All right. So here's the two issues I have with player character death. These are the things that keep me from being as brutal as John, much less as brutal as Trigger Happy.
I'm not brutal. I'm enhancing your role play.
However you like to put it.
I agree Pat's with nodding, and so is Chad.
Yeah, I agree with it.
Pat's
I
nodding.
Agree with
but,
both points.
All right, well, here's the point, though. Two things. One is loss of group cohesion. As someone who has stumped from day one, from episode one, for the group template, if you have a group template where the characters are interconnected, and one guy dies, and he now has to create an outsider. Not saying that always has to be the case, because sometimes you can find an NPC or a background dimension character who could be brought in and still fit within the group template.
Chad can put an NPC in the game for months waiting for me to die and take it over. It's been done.
I know, but Chad, like an insurance policy, is waiting for you to wreck the car. Not every game master is doing this. So there is a risk. I'm
GM
not saying...
Rule. Know your players.
I'm not saying a guarantee, but there is a risk of a loss of group cohesion. This was a real issue in Gnarlgate. Number two is a loss of personal investment.
The list of gates on Wikipedia is an amazing way to waste about 10 hours.
Well, I might have to get down there and add Gnarlgate.
Do
to it.
The Wikipedia list of common misconceptions, also
yes, that's
really
also
awesome.
Good.
Oh, you want to just see Wikipedia implode, read any discussion page on anything. It's fabulous. The second thing that would concern me about player death is a loss of personal investment. Now, here's what I mean by that. If you get a person who is not accustomed to regular player character death and you kill their character,
then they queef about it and cry all day.
No, not that. Not
you
that.
You kick them out of the group and you change your phone number.
I'm not saying that because, John, I agree with you.
Okay, because I am.
But what I'm saying is they basically say, I poured my heart and soul, several pages of background, all kinds of depth and development into character A. Now that I've realized that characters can die on any given trap, screw it, exactly as Johan put it, passive aggressive, I'm going to min-max the system and make a character I hardly care about and cruise through the game, and if he dies, who gives a crap? And I have seen
that's called being a bitch.
Yeah, it is.
Call it what you want, but it's a real risk among even reasonable people.
It is
well,
a risk.
Here is a little different tack on exactly what you're saying there.
Okay, go ahead. I have an example of that, but go ahead.
Okay, but well, a slightly different view on that would be not that you just make a character that I don't give a shit, they die. On the other hand, if you are in a campaign where there's character death and maybe you realize it, I would be afraid, and I would be guilty of this, of playing my character overly cautiously because I like this character. I don't want him to die. So I'm going to do my damnedest to keep him out of danger.
To the point
that's boring.
The game goes nowhere.
Yeah.
I walk into
a
room.
But that's boring.
I search for traps. I search for monsters. Okay, I'm re-rolling 100 times until I'm positive.
Yeah.
I go to the
or,
next room.
You know what? I get my mission. This is what we have to do. I realize, oh, you know what? I might die. I'm not doing it.
Well,
let's
hell
do
does
something
that?
Else.
I know.
It well, exactly.
Dude, it
who does it? That's
us.
Not what you want to do in this game. And you know what? You've got it. You're playing a game. You're trying to have fun. You're trying to enjoy
hold
it.
Hold on.
You want to do. No, don't it, hold on. I'm talking. Okay.
I love you,
yeah,
Pat.
He's talking.
We love you.
Soundboard.
Every time you don't talk for 10 minutes, that gets played.
Go on, Pat.
So you know you want to have fun. You want to be invested in this and do something wild and outrageous. So you do it. I don't want to be hampered by the crushing worry that my character is going to die. I want to do these outlandish things because we're playing a game. We're doing it for fun. I am counting on. I'm banking on the fact that. It's sort of an unspoken rule with the GM that, yeah, okay, there's the chance of death for sort of the things that you've mentioned for the outlandish things. But generally speaking, you're going to be doing superhuman things and you're going to miraculously survive them because you're the hero.
Yes. Pat, I think absolutely you've hit on what my core point is, which is there's an implicit, if not explicit, contract between the GM and player where the GM says, I'm going to give you a plot. The player says, I'm not going to be a douchebag and dodge your plot, but in return, you're not going to be a jackass and kill me anytime you have the chance. a real life example of this that came up, not in our current campaign, but our second or third to last campaign.
A real life example of when we played Sin.
I was wondering where that was going. Like, I really drove 90 miles an hour, and the cops said, oh, I'm not going to kill you, but that was really dangerous. Anyway, Dan.
Well, the real life example there would be what happened after Fear the Con 3 to John Landreth. But
I think Grungy Dan did too. Didn't he fall asleep driving after one of the Fear of the Cons going back to Arkansas?
Oh, yeah,
he tore up his Jeep.
Yeah.
The real life game example I'm going to give was in our most recent Apocalypsos game. The group was playing a team of salvagers who had a ship, and I was keeping sort of a loose list of here's your assets. And there came several points where I dangled plot in front of the group. And even as a non-killer GM, some of the players, at least one in particular, said to me, I ain't going to do that because I don't want to risk my character, my assets on something that is obviously so risky. And so whole plot points got dodged. Mm. And it really does happen. Exactly what you're describing, Pat, really does happen, that people say, look, I am so invested in this. You know, we've got a running group kitty or group assets or whatever it is, and I don't want to risk them on stupid crap because if I go into the dungeon, I might be killed by a random chest trap. So
is there
a
stupid enough that's okay for you? I mean, like, we're salvagers. Oh, I heard there was a wrench over there in Kilrathi space with Klingons and the case of space AIDS. Why won't my players go get it? Like, I'm okay with that.
See, to me, John, you...
The straw man I would draw out of that is the threat wasn't that high.
Okay.
See, the threat was more of a mid-level threat.
That's fine, then. Your players are being wimps.
When you're a game master and you run a game where there is player death, where there is character death...
Player death I'm working on.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll have an episode about that with my attorney pretty soon.
When you are a game master... When you're a game master and you run a game where character death is very real and very in everybody's face... If the players are playing it to where I'm really invested in my character, which they should be invested in their character. I'm really invested in this character and I don't want him to die and I'm too afraid to do anything and I'm never going to do anything and I'm never going to do it. And it's seizing. That's not how it happens. How it happens is you play in character. If you are playing a brave person, you are brave. You face dangers, and if death may come, it comes. And if you are playing a cowardly character, you play that character in character, and you play him as a coward. And you know what? Death comes for the cowards, too. And when they die, it's great because they piss their pants, and it's wonderful.
Chad, I really can't.
Show enough. We just pumped.
Per se, disagree with you. Let me give a counterexample that came from our recent game. When Gnarl got killed.
Sudden death is not in our current campaign?
Absolutely. And as a result, I don't want to get into the gaming story, but several games later, we came up with some very in-character, universe, non-breaking reasons to bring him back.
Story advancing.
And some great RP has come out of his return.
Mm-hmm.
There has been evolution of his character. Wonderful stuff has come out of the fact that he has been brought back from
all
the dead.
All the characters advanced. I don't mean mechanically, level-wise. Right. All the characters advanced when your character died.
Yes.
It proves John's point.
I don't disagree.
All of the characters advanced when we brought the character back to life.
Yes.
It proves our point. We were able, and when I say we, I mean you and me, because yes. We did a sidebar and we colluded to this. We advanced the plot.
And you know what else we proved is a central principle of gaming, which is there is no problem in your game a few drinks can't solve.
Colors.
Chad and I met up at a restaurant and had a few drinks, and it solved every problem we were having in that game.
Every single
one. It ended Gnarl Gate.
Yeah.
And but the point is, though.
Pat, clink me. I know you're empty, but there we go.
That when we were at that moment where after Gnarl had died and I was creating a new character, I will not lie. The new character I was creating had some character depth, had some interesting background to her. It was a female Gnarl. Mm-hmm. But I will not lie.
She was a total bitch.
Was somewhat min-maxed.
Is her name Pearl?
Because of the fact that Gnarl, I think you guys overestimated how powerful he was. This character was somewhat...
I can feel that one in my nipples.
Was somewhat a bit more min-maxed to be harder to hit and harder to kill. And in that regard, was a little bit more shallow than normal.
I completely overestimated how...
Why is it shallow to have a character that's hard to kill?
I don't think it is. And I completely overestimated how easy it was to kill Gnarl, because Gnarl wasn't supposed to be killed. None of the characters are supposed to die in our campaign.
It was just, it was a screw up on the part of multiple people.
Mm-hmm. Everybody.
And we sat down with a few beers and corrected it. But this goes back to my very original point. I don't think there's a wrong answer to how lethal a campaign is. There just has to be common agreement.
Yeah, there has to be a
common understanding.
And I will warn, though.
And by the way, one more person says player death, I'm going to go get my shotgun.
It can't be character death. No,
you want to go just blow a few rounds out into the air out in the street? Because that sounds really fun to me right now.
I don't know. Is it a Mexican holiday?
There cannot be consensus in this, because I've seen it go wrong. You can't have 90% of the group down with going one way or the other and have one person who is against it. Because I have run multiple games where everybody's cool with player death except one.
Yeah.
And when that person died, you know what they made? They made a red shirt. Not because they were whiny bitches or passive aggressive, although they were a little whiny, but they did it because they didn't want it. Yeah, they didn't want the death. They weren't into it. That's not how they have fun. And
you can run multiple tiers of deadliness for multiple people. I always get 300% kill John, and I love it. You don't do that to other players.
I know, and we've done that before. We've done no death campaigns. But again, it's the GMing tool. You have to know your players. If I have John here, who is 300% death, and we have it worked out, and it is going to happen, it might even happen sooner than we planned. And then I have Dan over here who is,
It's not preordained. Sometimes it doesn't happen.
Sometimes it
doesn't. But it could happen every single night. And that's where I get my fun.
And that's the thing. I think you hit the nail on the head there with what you said is it's up to the GM to know the players.
Yes.
In my experience, because I'm that guy that does the long standing campaigns. I've been in a couple of long standing campaigns, and guess what? Big shock. My characters are still alive. They didn't die. But we
did
not
be very long if everybody died.
Well, exactly. But we did not sit down at the beginning of that campaign and talk, like Dan was saying, have a discussion about what's the lethality level that we want to play. Do we want to have character death or not? We didn't do that. We just started playing the campaign. I think the hope, you know, was that this is going to be a long-standing campaign. We're going to keep going with this. And what happens in this is that, you know, you've got your characters that you play them that you hope that they don't die. And what I like about it is that for me as a player, I felt that the chance of death is there. The characters can die, but I hope that they don't. And I was able to play it that way. On the flip side of it, though, you've got your GM that is essentially, like what I said before, kind of looking out for the characters a little bit. You let it play out. You let it be, you know, tough and hard. And we didn't always win. Sometimes we lost. And, you know, sometimes maybe one person went down, got wounded, whatever. Maybe even got some kind of a crippling wound that they kept with them. But they didn't die unless it was something just like way outlandish or agreed upon. And the difference is, though, is that I think what that allowed was, since it never really was talked about in the first place, we didn't decide to, in the first place, we're just not going to die. It was always sort of nebulous out there. Mm-hmm. We didn't know.
Pat, great example of how that worked out wonderfully was in Wayne's first campaign, the Skies of Glass game that I was running. And I realized Skies of Glass is rare among systems in that it allows for permanent crippling penalties. But I made clear from the start that this is a game about survival. When you pull out a gun, something very, very bad is about to happen to someone. And in the course of that game, every single combat that occurred, one of two things was true. Either one, you guys had the drop on your enemy where they were not ready for you. I take that back, one of three. You had the drop on them. Two, you had wildly superior position. There's one combat you guys did from behind an embankment where they had almost no chance of hitting you. Mm. Or three, the one time you guys were genuinely threatened, you surrendered. When you were on the roof of that building, you were gone.
But
when you guys were trapped on the roof of that building,
cry about how hard the world is in our role playing game and actually do heroic things even if they're dangerous.
When the bandits
pounded Chad.
Yeah.
When the bandits showed up, you guys realized, even if we live, that doesn't mean a gun ain't going to take my hand off or isn't going to leave me with a permanent limp.
Hey, John.
Or a missing lung.
Guess who had to rescue him?
You. Cowboys.
And
it's
so
hard having balls.
And so you
it?
Guys,
it it's
you,
such a burden.
I was never so scared as when you
we'll
came
get to
rescue
that in a second.
Never so scared.
So you guys ended up surrendering. Chad, how did you rescue them? What was the exact phrase? Give me a blank and I will own this game.
Clipboard?
Yep.
That's right.
Chad came in and pretended to be somebody he was not. And at the organizational level, disrupted the group that was holding them prisoner.
And then got a hold of a rocket launcher.
And then got a hold of a rocket-propelled grenade.
Cool gaming story, guys.
Which is as good as a clipboard.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You don't aim it at people. You aim it at other stuff that blows up.
You aim it at directions. Mm-hmm. When you're at an RPG, you just aim it in directions.
Uh-huh.
RPG the RPG.
Yep.
Oh, my God. Totally. I'm in. So let me ask you guys real quick, you know, I don't want to belabor this too much because, you know,
we've been doing
that's
that
what
all
we
episode,
do.
Yeah.
But
200 and what episodes?
Prefer, like, if you were running or playing in a game, whatever your preference is, and they came to you, your players and Game Master came to you and says, what do you want? We will go with whatever you want. We'll be happy with it. What would your preferred method be?
I am okay with whatever, as long as it's clearly communicated. I will only call BS.
You are the Elder Statesman.
If I'm shocked by it, if I'm surprised by it. What is my preference? It'd be the big three. I only want my character to die if I flaunt it, if it's PCN fighting, or if it makes absolute, unquestionable story sense for this character to go down. It's not some shootout in a bar that's supposed to make a point. It's not some sub-boss. This was him taking a thermal detonator down to the reactor to save the universe.
I don't think you get to have those stupid shootouts in RPGs. Narrate them if you must. Write a story on the wiki. But if DICE comes out and the other guy's got a gun, someone's going to die.
John, I don't disagree.
And that's your preference.
I don't disagree with you in terms of, yes, that is indeed how you run a game. That's not how everyone runs a game. Keep in mind, random encounter charts are used by other people, even if not us.
Yeah, well, I'm telling them the Fear of the Boot perspective is that they're totally wrong and they need to burn all their books and light a candle to Kevin Symbieta and come to Fear of the Confor and play in my Star Wars game and die. Like all 12 of my PCs last year's did across mm-hmm. both games.
Pat, what's your preference?
My preference is mainly that the characters don't die.
Right.
I don't want my character to die.
And I think that's perfectly acceptable. Mm-hmm. Chris?
You mean my preference for character death?
Yes.
No.
Well,
no.
Death.
The other 12 things we've been talking about this episode, Chris. Holy shit.
That was awesome, Chris. Really. That's even better than
just
me.
Just want to make sure I know exactly what he's asking.
I may not say something, but I at least pay attention.
I'm sorry, what?
Okay. Leave the old man alone. Chris, what is your preference on character death?
My preference really comes down to, I definitely lean a little bit more towards Johnny G's style. However, I do want it to mean something. If it is that random encounter, then suddenly if that character dies, I kind of look at it as my responsibility then to, I got to make something more out of that because I don't want the player to have a meaningless death. So that counter, which may have been random, or which may have been not necessarily supposed to result in death when I was first writing it out, I got to try and change that up to make it mean a little bit more. So that it matters more to this player.
Well, John,
we'll do John, and then
what's
we'll
your know official, John's.
Yeah, we know John. What's your
my official? No, I don't think you guys do know mine.
No,
I'll just die every freaking game.
Let's
in fact,
hear it.
I'm not even out to have all my characters die.
What is your perspective for other people? Not yourself, but for other people.
For when I'm GMing.
Yeah, if you're GMing.
If I'm GMing and something potentially lethal is happening, it is in fact potentially lethal. I don't have very many combat encounters. I don't put dart traps on boxes unless there's something you need in the box and the trap can kill you.
Or if it's Dan.
No, both situations qualify.
I didn't live long enough to find out whether it was plot significant or not.
It was significant. Anyway, my point is dramatic tension demands the possibility that someone can get offed. Now, you can be a bullshit artist about it, and if I'm running for brand new players, I am. I tell them they can die, and then I don't kill them. A lot of GMs do that for a lot of groups for forever. I have to believe I can get offed at any second if I'm in the danger zone to have fun.
John, let me give 2 points here in agreement with what you just said. About, first of all, players may believe they can get off, but you hold it back because you know the player. In the Star Trek game I'm running on my Friday groups, look, Star Trek, and phasers and disruptors, they kill you. Particles don't even hit the floor. There was a point where Carla was about to get killed. I rolled the dice, even said this guy has no skill level, and still rolled like a critical hit. And on the fly changed it to he shoots.
You're like,
he was aiming for a box.
Did you do it behind a screen?
No. He was sitting there and he's like, he rolled the dice. He's like, oh my God, if I kill Carl's character, there's going to be no nookie tonight.
Mm-hmm.
No, it wasn't even, it was just
that's why
swing
GM,
and a miss. Carla,
that's why
you made
podcast.
It.
She, just like Tex has the best luck of any roller I've ever met, she has the worst. And I knew that if I
thought that was Pat and Wayne, actually.
No, you have never seen Carla roll. She cannot roll success at anything. And
I knew, play Don't Pass with her.
I knew that if I killed her character, it was going to really discourage her. And there was a good in-character reason why the people shooting at her would not want her dead. And so I simply changed on the fly that they were just doing suppressing fire instead of killing fire. Your point about the dice being meaningful. I am a firm believer. If there are four people at the table, there are five players. The fifth player is the dice. Because of the fact that the dice... I know you'll disagree with this.
Story... Dice should not trump story.
Didn't say
they
that.
They don't trump it.
Didn't
they
say that.
They define the chaotic
it.
Elements of it.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Didn't say that. But the fact is, what do I love about characters? Characters surprise me. What do I love about the dice? The dice surprise me. I don't control them any more than I do the players. And John, I will have to give you absolute credit that while in your first campaign I played with you, you killed me to a dart trap. In your second campaign, there were two... was a droidica droid destroyers that no one was supposed to get control of. And I rolled a critical success and you said, you got them.
Yep.
You've got it. You are now walking around with two wildly overpowered droids because of the fact that you rolled it over the table. And so in your game, you really do, in all fairness, treat the dice as the nth player.
I like dealing with insane out-of-control player success much more than I like dealing with insane out-of-control player failure, but I demand that the specter of that failure hang over their heads at all times enrich the experience.
So while I don't GM your way, I totally respect the internal consistency of the way you do it. I totally respect that. So Chad, you started the question. We'll end it with you. What is your perspective?
What I want, like if my players came to
me... Yes, sir.
And they said, Chad, we will go with whatever you want.
I doubt anyone would say that, but nonetheless, let's just play the theoretical.
I would say that, Chad.
John is actually the only person who's ever said it, because what I want is I want 100% lethality in the game. I want the players, the character, I was about to say player death again.
I almost had to go for the shotgun.
I want the characters to be able to die. And I want the game to be so lethal. I don't want a 20,000-page rule book on realistic combat. I want the combat to be so lethal. I want it to be something that you said earlier. There is a tense situation, and in every role-playing game out there, every D&D where everybody's a hero and all this sort of stuff, it's like, oh, roll for initiative, and before the Game Master says anything, players are pulling out dice and rolling initiatives because combat's great, isn't it? No, I want combat to be deadly.
No, combat sucks.
I want combat to suck. I want it to be dark. I want it to be dirty. And I want people to die.
You know, as a
and
player,
on top of that,
all right, go ahead.
I want even more than that, too. Because I want there to be character tension between the people. I want players to walk into, or characters to walk into a room and not trust their fellow players.
Well, and here's the big difference that I think creates that sense that differentiates you from, say, me or Pat. You're not looking for a long campaign. If it goes down in a blaze of glory five games in, it's the greatest game you've ever played.
See, that's the misconception.
But what I would argue is your model's untenable for a two-year campaign.
Yeah, I agree.
It's untenable. I disagree. I completely
I've played
disagree.
In a year-long campaign with Chad's paradigm that way. I had to change characters once, but who gives
I'm going to jump to Chad's defense on this one, because I think that the end result that you can get, though, from both is the same, because you can do a four game thing with Chad, have your characters be dead and done and gone, and have an incredible experience as to what you just went through in that short amount of time that is equivalent to the experience you can get by doing a year long campaign that ends just as satisfactorily, but at the same time it just went longer. I think that you can have both with both approaches.
And I think you can have a long campaign. I think what kills campaigns are not characters and characters dying. It's players getting upset about their characters dying. And if everybody's on board
right.
and has the buy-in, As long as there's no TPK, that is the one caveat I'll put into this.
I did that once. It was great.
I think that TPKs before the story is done is a bad thing, because if there's no characters, there's no story.
It was a meaningless encounter.
What happened? Did the campaign end?
Yes, the campaign ended, but you know what? Actually, everybody was really
saying people won't be happy with that.
They were happy it ended. It was a TPK to a random encounter. It was a game.
Yeah.
The game had hardly even gotten started. But Chad, you'll actually appreciate this. The thing that made it good is that in the end, we all looked at each other and we all said, you know what?
We should have had
the only reason
this
started is because the guy who started it was playing his character the way his character was, and his character started that fight, and I ended up finishing it. And that was, everybody kind of agreed that
it wasn't a completely random encounter. It was dramatically grounded.
But anyway, you guys see what I'm saying, though, is that I believe that what ends campaigns, if we don't have TPK, what ends campaigns is not the characters dying, it's the players getting upset about the characters dying. And now
we're losing investment.
Well, and what we're saying here is that everybody's buying into this. And that so when everybody agrees with me, my players say, Chad, we want to do what you want to do on this, and we are completely behind it, then that means that they have written into their characters and written into their background, brothers, sisters, you know, people that they can pick up, NPCs, and I allow people to jump in NPCs in my games. And there is continuation and buy-in into the plot.
I get that, because going back to the foundational concept I gave on this, it has to do with group consensus.
Right.
And what you've described there is your preference, but it includes the caveat of group consensus.
I have run two games like this, and both games did not have 100% buy-in from the players. It had 90% buy-in from the players, did not have 100%. That 10% killed the game. If you can get 100% buy-in, then I think you're golden.
That's why I love Skies of Glass or games like it, because I don't have to threaten you with death. I can wreck you without killing you.
Exactly. I want combat to have consequence.
Yeah. I think the combat can definitely, absolutely have consequence without it going so far as to the PC death.
Well, of course, and you know what, Pat? I know exactly what you're talking about. I 100% agree with it, and I want that in my game, and I want the consequence of everything
else. And going back to that Skies of Glass game, there's a story I know we've beaten death on the show where Pat accidentally clubs the guy to death. There's a great example where victory had a consequence.
Yeah. Yes.
Sure.
He won, and in the process of winning, because his character was deep and invested, he had to live with a guilt, and number two, deal with the fact he'd killed the mayor's nephew, which had in-game consequences apart from his own interpretation of the character. He had double whammy consequences from victory,
failure. That kind of thing, it falls back onto the player, because if somebody else is playing my character, they may have been just like, to hell with it, I don't care who I killed. That, awesome, he's dead, go. You know, it's all in how you as the player are going to react to these things.
Do you know why?
That's why what I was saying, in my games, it's like we didn't really talk about this and have buy-in, like you're saying, of 100% buy-in about this, that, or the other. It was not discussed. It was sort of nebulous. It was sort of assumed that it was this a possibility, but, you know, and it's out there. Mm-hmm. So we played it that way, and you had to role-play. That's the thing. We role-played it. I was role-playing, and I was into what was going on, and I was role-playing the fact that, yes, this is a dangerous situation, and I might die. I hope that I don't, and, you know, go from there. I just don't like to get into the whole fact of I don't want to start a campaign by sitting down and saying, okay, player death, how are we going to handle it? I think that you're shooting yourself in the foot in the very beginning.
My problem with this whole debate, this whole thing on the forums, in conversations, and even on this podcast, is that people look at it as there's a right way and a wrong way, and there isn't. There is not. There's no
absolutely
wrong
correct.
Way to Dan, our campaign, no character death. Is it epic?
Yeah,
are
it,
you
is,
guys
it is epic.
Enjoying this campaign?
Gnarl's death, epic. Gnarl's return, epic.
Epic-er.
Other characters, Saren, Sir William, all these people, Bernaldo, all these people.
God, you guys have stupid names.
Not dying? Is that still epic?
Yeah.
John, the games that we have played where your characters have died, where your characters have betrayed the party, where other people have betrayed the party, where there has been real,
that's pretty much
visceral
always
death, have those games been really epic?
Yes.
Chad, yeah. One of the greatest campaigns of all time, end of the game, my character is sitting there alone on the bridge of the ship because your character is dead. Tim's character is dead. Paul's character is dead. And the epilogue of the game is him basically giving the final orders of what do we do next. And that's where it goes to black. Freaking epic.
And my character's death? Totally meaningless. It's the meaningless gesture. And it was great.
It's bad, wrong, fun.
Yes.
There is no such thing.
It's ridiculous. Yeah.
There is no right answer to this except what the players and the game master want.
The people who argue that, and they say that, oh, you don't have character death in your games. You're just ruiner. You're just wrong. You're just going, oh, that's just so wrong. No, that line of thinking is wrong. Because it works for you and your groups and the groups you've played with in the past does not mean that it is the one and only way.
Yes.
And the people who say, oh, you can't have any character death at all. People will get so invested in their characters. And when their characters die, they get upset and they make red shirts. And oh, sometimes people are pussies, okay?
Yeah.
Just because that works for you and your group does not mean it's right.
So, yes. In summary, you can do something other than how Chad and I like it, but you're a pussy if you do it. But that's okay, but it's fun.
You caught that?
And see. Hey.
Up until that point, Chad, I 10% agree with you.
No, I did all the way through.
Okay.
Actually, until that point. So, and then that came.
Something about Fear the Con. As for the rest of you guys, have a great week.
Did we come to a conclusion?
No, Chris, shut up. Have a great week. This was a fun episode to make. I hope you guys enjoyed it half as much as we enjoyed making it.
Go listen to Kicked in the Dice Bags. I really like those guys.
John just toasted himself.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go
shut
on now, too.
Oh, you guys are all toasted. What are you talking about?
You got to catch up now.
So, thank you guys for tuning in. Some of you guys we will see like in a week or two.
Woohoo!
The rest of you guys, we will catch you in the next recording. So, have a great week and great games, and we will catch you then.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2011. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.